You're now listening to Sound Talent Media. Check out more shows at soundtalentmedia.com.
Shopify grows your business no matter how far or big you grow. Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. Whether you're selling your fans' next favorite shirt or an exclusive piece of podcast merch, Shopify helps you sell everywhere. Shopify powers 10% of all e-commerce in the U.S. Allbirds, Rothy's, Brooklinen, and millions of other entrepreneurs of every size across 175 countries. Plus, Shopify's award-winning help is there to support your success every step of the way. Because businesses that grow, grow with Shopify. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/income, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/income now to grow your business, no matter what stage you're in.
Welcome to episode one of That One Time on Tour. My name is Chris Swinney. I'll be your host. This is my new podcast where I talk to friends and acquaintances of mine that have been on the road in some form or another in and around the music industry. We talk about stories, that have funny stories, scary stories, whatever there is to talk about, we covered in this podcast. I'm very, very excited to get this thing going. Thank you guys so much for checking this out. Please, if you enjoy this first episode, please subscribe on iTunes. Leave us a review. It'll help grow this thing. Hopefully, I'm going to do this pretty consistently, get some good episodes out there. I've got some guests lined up, and I think it's going to be really cool. So thank you once again for checking this out. My first guest is one of the best guys in the entire world. His name is Joel Green. He is a founding member of the band Emery. He played with me in my band, The Widow Jenkins. He did pre-production for his solo record at my old recording studio, The Gallows. He went on vacation with my family. He lived with my sister for 5 years as a roommate. He's the best guy in the world. I have a long history with Joel, and we cover a lot of it in this podcast. So thank you once again for checking this out. Please, if you enjoy this, tell your friends, you know, share it on Facebook. Like us on Facebook, like us on SoundCloud, like us on Instagram. We have a Twitter. We have all kinds of stuff. And all of the handles are the same for the social media. It's /TOTOT podcast, That One Time on Tour podcast. So thank you guys once again. And here it is, my conversation with my good friend, Joel Green. Joel, what's going on, man? This is Chris. How you doing?
Pretty good, man. How you been doing?
I've been doing really, really well, man. I miss you. I feel like I haven't seen you for like a decade.
It has been a really long time.
Yeah.
Probably close to a decade.
When did you move back to South Carolina from Indiana? I don't remember.
It was like 2010 or 2011.
Okay.
Well, I can't remember exactly.
So yeah, it was like right before I moved to the beach. I'm pretty sure. Like a year before or so.
Yeah.
Well, that's
yeah,
cool.
I think it was right around that same time. Because I remember like everything I know about you from like the time you moved down to the beach and everything was just through Facebook.
Yeah. I know I tried to get you to come down there and run sound for me or something a couple of times, right?
Yeah, I remember that, man. I really wanted to too. I was like, man, that'd be fun.
Well, but, I used to hit up Brian and you and like anybody that I was friends with that knew how to run sound because I was running this big venue and I needed sound guys and I didn't have any sound guys hardly at all.
Yeah.
So yeah, so you never took me up on that, but it would have been fun.
I'm sure, man. It's weird that there's not that many sound guys down there because it seems like
there are sound guys.
The music scene was like thriving down there.
Well, here's like, the thing about Gulf Shores and Orange Beach. Like, the music scene is made up mostly of cover bands, which you know it's a beach town. You know, you and I both have played in cover bands, so it kind of makes sense. But the sound guy issue was, I had a plethora of sound guys, but they all lived in Mobile and they didn't want to drive to Gulf Shores
to do the job, because it was like you'd have to get there and be there for like 6-7 hours and set up and tear down, and the money wasn't that great. So I thought, well, if I had a buddy of mine that came down and lived with me at the beach, they would just go in every day and work, and it'd be fun. And because, I mean, the sound guys in Mobile make more money, and they don't want to drive to the beach and be there all day to make less money.
Yeah, that makes sense.
There's not a lot of people that actually live in Gulf Shores that are kind of sound tech guys.
Yeah.
So that was the issue. I was running this place, and I needed some good employees, and I was like, well, I'm just going to go to my Rolodex and get all my buddies to move down, and it never worked.
Well, I guess, I mean, you got a pretty sweet deal, because you could be like, hey, you just live with me, you know?
Yeah, I was not even going to charge rent. I'm like, hey, just come live with me, work, and I'll pay you under the table, whatever it takes.
I don't know why I didn't do it, man. I mean, that sounded like a great deal.
Well, I mean, you already moved to Indiana to hang out with me once, and that didn't work out great, so... Speaking of that, let's, you know, I would like to talk. This is That One Time on Tour. You are guest number one. This is my first episode I've ever done, so you should feel pretty
awesome.
Pretty cool about that.
I really do. Yeah, this is great. Very exciting.
I mean, do you listen to podcasts very much?
Not that much, man. I love the concept of a podcast. I've actually talked about doing one with a buddy of mine. Okay. We're, you know, I mean, still in the development stage, but I don't know, man. They are fun to listen to. Like I get in on the Joe Rogan thing sometimes. His stuff's really interesting, but it's so long. Like I can't listen to a 3.5 hour episode. Well, I just don't have time for that. I'll just catch little snippets of it. You know, it's really cool.
I mean, I like podcasts because, you know, I'm in and around music so much. I mean, now my job is teaching guitar, so I'm playing guitar all day. I'm you know, hearing kids out of tune play all day. So the last thing I really want to do on my commute home or my commute to work is listen to music. And so I used to be into talk radio, but it just kind of dragged on and there was too many ads. So when I first got into podcasts, it was kind of cool because it's tailored to what you like, you know.
So
I listen to like movie podcasts and music podcasts, and I just thought, you know, I'm not saying I'm better than anybody else, but you know, why not? Let's try it. I got a lot of friends that have done a lot of cool stuff. I might as well have conversations with them and record it.
Yeah. And that's the funny thing about it is like, we have really led, you know, again, not to sound boastful or anything, but we've led some pretty interesting lives. You know, like we got a lot of crazy experiences that a lot of people that like, maybe I went to high school with didn't get to do, you know?
And yeah. That's the one thing that when people ask me all the time, they're like, wow, you got to leave the country for work. I'm like, yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, when you don't really get to see a lot of like, you know, some of the Atari stuff, like when we went to South Africa and not whatnot, we had some days off where we actually got to enjoy the country and see the culture. But the majority of the time when you're in another country playing music, or even just domestic playing music, you pretty much see hotels, tour buses, vans, and venues. That's about it.
Exactly. Yeah.
I mean,
I remember being on Warped Tour one time, like I couldn't keep track of where we were in the country.
I've had that problem many times. I've done Warped Tour countless. I think I was trying to figure it out a couple months ago. I think I've done like over 100 days on Warped Tour in my career. I've never done like a full one, but I've always done like stints.
Yeah.
And,
dude, the full one is brutal, man.
Well, yeah, I can't imagine.
Like, even
that.
On a bus, it's so hard. It's like, you know, you don't get to shower every day. And I mean, that's the kind of stuff you take for granted. Like,
well, yeah, you know, it's always nice whenever I would do Warped Tour and then we'd go back to like a normal tour. And it's like, oh, we get to go to Motel 6 and actually take showers and watch Saved by the Bell. You
know? Exactly. Like lay in a bed.
Yeah, totally. Yeah. I mean, like, because buses are nice. Vans are nice. RVs are nice. I've done a couple RV tours. And I mean, that's as close to a bus as you can get. The issue with RVs is that you don't have a guy driving you.
Yeah, exactly. You got to drive yourself.
Although I will tell you, my first band, Chronic Chaos, we bought an RV to do some touring right before the band kind of called it quits. And Jason, our drummer, which I'm not sure, did you ever meet Jason? Big, big, tall guy, used to play drums in my first band.
Honestly, I don't know, man. I mean, it doesn't ring any bells.
Well, if Jason Lozier, if you're listening, man, you're going to be a future guest. So shout out to Jason Lozier. But, Jason was so great because not only did he love to drive, but he's the best mechanic in the world. So anytime anything would go wrong with any of our vehicles, we wouldn't have to go to a shop or anything. We would just sit at the hotel and Jason would go down to whatever auto parts store was there, buy what we needed. And a day or two later, if it was that bad, we'd be back on the road.
Yeah.
And I mean,
that's great. Yeah. That's every band needs, like a mechanically tech-minded person.
I think what every band really needs, and I've been lucky to have this in almost every band I've been in, is there needs to be like the business-minded guy, which is normally what I've been, like the guy that books, the guy that does the interviews, the guy that kind of, if you don't have a publicist, you don't have all that stuff, you kind of, you take care of that. And then you need somebody that can kind of fix things if they break.
Exactly.
And I think if you have those two components, everybody else can kind of do whatever they want, because at least you've got your major things covered for when you go on tour or when you're doing like projects.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, once, you know, if you have that, and generally I think those two guys aren't necessarily like the talent in the band. You need the talent, you need whatever like makes your band, you know, makes people want to listen to your band. But you know, you got those three, and then the other guy can be like the Charlie from Always Sunny in Philadelphia, like the crazy wild card, like, you know.
Well, and I've always felt like, you know, whatever I lacked in the whole charisma talent thing, I've never really been a front man. I've always been the guitar guy. I've done some backing vocals. But like in my first band, Chronic Chaos, and then even in The Widow Jenkins, which we'll talk about soon, that you played in with me, even though I wasn't the singer, I did most of the talking and like the on stage stuff.
Yeah.
Because I always felt confident in that, but I didn't want to be like the front guy, because I've never been able to write lyrics. I've never, you know, been able to be a great singer, but I also wanted to kind of be in charge.
Yeah.
And maybe that's just like the control freak in me, but yeah, I always felt like whatever I lacked in the whole charisma, like being a front man, being a singer, I made up for in like passion and hard work. And that, you know, when you're an underground kind of DIY band, even I'm talking like without a label, without anything, there's a lot of work that goes into it. I mean, I remember when I was in Chronic Chaos, my first band, we used to steal phone cards. Jason worked at some like gas station, and we'd steal phone cards when you didn't used to have to like get them, you know, you'd have to give them to the clerk and then they'd make them work. You could just take them.
Yeah.
And we would
like the preloaded cards.
Yeah. And there, and I don't know how familiar you are with it, but there was this magazine or this fanzine, I guess, that came out called, you know, BYOFL, which is Book Your Own Fucking Life. And it was kind of like pre-internet, and you would go to the page wherever the city or the state was you wanted to book a show, and it had all these bands and all their contacts and like venues and like people that would throw a show for you. And I'll tell you, man, like our first few tours, I didn't use the internet at all. I was calling people. I was sending out demos, like actual physical demos, sometimes tapes, not even CDs.
Yeah, I remember those days, man. That's what I did during when I was in college.
So in one thing, like people used to be like, oh, why does Chronic Chaos getting all these gigs? Why are they being able to tour? Nobody was doing it for me. I was doing it myself.
Yeah.
So when you get in a band and then you've got people kind of working for you and like taking a lot of that, you know, the brunt of the hard work away, I always felt a little weird because I felt like I didn't have anything to do.
Yeah, exactly.
Like, I don't know. I know a little bit about your story just from talking to you and like, you know, stuff that's kind of folklore in the Emory universe. By the way, everybody that's listening, Joel was a founding, I guess I'll say founding member. I think I heard through the grapevine that you didn't actually play the first Emory show.
Right. Yeah. I wasn't like a original member.
But we'll say founding member, cause you were on like the first released record and you were in the band when they got signed, right?
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, I was like, basically the band started in college in South Carolina. You know, we all went to Winthrop. Everybody knows the story. Anybody who's an Emory fan, like a real fan probably knows, but like, you know, the guy that was supposed to play bass, ended up pulling out at the last second. He's like, I don't want to move to Seattle. So he didn't go. And I was planning on moving out there anyway with those dudes. So I was like, I'll play bass. Because, I mean, you know, it seemed like it was
because you're originally a guitarist, right?
Yeah. Yeah. Like, I, you know, in college I was playing like guitar and blues bands and stuff like that. But, you know, I mean, you know how it is. I mean, you play guitar, you play bass.
I mean, let's talk about the first time that you and I met and did a tour together. What was I playing?
Yeah, you were a guitar player.
Well, I was a guitar player, but I was playing bass.
Yeah.
I was in Brazil playing bass because they lost their bass player. We won't go into the whole story because that's for another podcast. But
dude, that was the funniest to me. Like, because you showed up and like, I mean, are we allowed to say his name or?
Yeah, I mean, just this isn't like a shit talking thing, but you can say his name.
Yeah, okay, so like, you know, Ben was there, and then like he wasn't the next day. He just disappeared.
And I remember how scared I was because, and a lot of the people out there in podcast land might not know what we're talking about, but I was touring with a band called Brazil from here in Muncie, Indiana. They were on Fearless Records. We were
great band.
It was a great band. You're right. Some of the guys, and hopefully yeah. Jonathan and Nick and some of those guys, Eric, will be guests on this podcast. But so the first, like, I did Warped Tour with them as their tour manager and like kind of working on their gear and stuff. I was just kind of like a hired guy that was a crew guy. And I was doing mm-hmm. that when I wasn't touring with my other bands. And we got asked to do the first ever Emory headlining tour as main support. I believe we were main support, right?
Yeah.
Yeah. Main support. And so some stuff went down and the original bass player, Ben, ended up leaving the tour in Nashville, took all of his stuff with him. And all the guys were kind of freaked out. They didn't know what they're going to do. Like this, it was a big deal. Like at that point on your first headlining tour with Emory, you guys were killing it. Like you guys were selling things out. Like it was great.
Yeah, it was. I remember that was a great tour, man.
So here's what happened. So we're in Nashville. And the guys in Brazil are kind of freaking a little bit. They don't know what's going to happen. Are we going to have to go home? You know, like this is a big tour. It's going to help the band a lot. And I was like, you guys know I can play bass, right? And they all kind of looked at me kind of funny. And they're like, well, you got to learn like 10 songs in one night. Because the next day was Little Rock, Arkansas.
Yeah.
And so we were staying at a buddy's house in Nashville after the gig. And I set up literally till 7 o'clock in the morning with my Discman. I didn't have an iPod with my, I had to like get into the merch tub and get a CD out and open it. Cause I didn't have the CD. Yeah. So I got the CD out. I set up in this guy's house. I didn't know the guy. It was friends of the guys in Brazil. And he had a bass and it was a 5-string and I hate 5-strings. Like that's another story, but
yeah, they're the worst.
So I set up until like 7-8 in the morning learning. And I learned like 6 or 7 songs. I tried to get all 10. It wasn't going to happen. And then I got to the gig there in Little Rock. I can't remember the name of the venue, but I remember walking in and I barely knew you. The one thing that I knew about you was that you were super nice and you liked to drink a little.
Mm-hmm.
And that you and the guys in Emory every day before the gig would watch the OC in the van.
Yeah, so, we used to love that show.
I was telling my wife that the other night because I came home from work and she was watching the OC and I'm like, funny you're watching that. That's probably going to get brought up on the podcast with Joel. Because I remember, I stuck my head in the van that one day and I said, what are you guys doing? Like, dude, we're watching the OC, man. You know? And I was like, the OC? Like, I wasn't in the know. I wasn't woke, as they say, to the OC.
It was cool, man. I mean, it was because I'm a 90210 guy.
Well, yeah, like, you and I bonded over a lot of that. I mean, you're a Saved by the Bell guy too, right?
Yeah, absolutely, man. Yeah. I was watching that today, as a matter of fact.
There's a really good podcast. I mean, I have nothing to do with it, but I'll give a shout out if someone wants to check it out. It's called Go Bayside. It's this this girl, April Richardson. She lives out in LA, and they deconstruct and break down every episode of Saved by the Bell. It's the funniest thing in the world. You have to check it out.
I might have to start listening to that. That's awesome.
But yeah, so I roll in to the venue in Little Rock, and I go up to you, and I don't know if you remember this full thing, but I just remember that I went up and said, hey man, I have to play bass for the rest of the tour. I don't have any gear. I said, is there any way that you would be willing to let me play your stuff, play your bass and play through your amp? And do you remember what you told me?
Not exactly, but I remember I was totally cool with it.
Well, you told me, you said, yeah, man, I think that's a good idea, but how about this? I'll let you use it every night, but you got to change the strings every other show.
That sounds like something I'd say.
And I was like, sold. I have to change the strings every other show to play your gear. Great. And the cool thing about that, you guys probably don't realize this, but the whole rest of the tour, we never had to do any unloading or loading because you guys were the headliners, and Devin and Toby and Matt and everybody, they were kind of like, oh, well, he's using Joel's amp, so we'll just leave our amps out here.
Mm-hmm.
So we used like all of Emory's gear for the next like 8 weeks of the tour.
That was so great, though. I mean, it worked out good for everybody. Like, cause,
it really
did. A lot more stage on room on the stage for everybody.
Yeah, because there wasn't, you know, because there were other bands like, let me see, From First to Last was on that tour. Who else played on that tour? There were some other bands. The band from Kentucky that I'm totally not remembering the name of the band. But did A Thorn for Every Heart play on that tour?
They may have.
I think they did. My buddy Kelvin and those guys, I'm friends with them on Facebook. Maybe they'll say something and tell me that they were on that tour.
That's my biggest problem, is like trying to remember which bands were on which tour, man. Like, I've got all my tour passes all framed up and everything.
Yeah.
And I have to, that's kind of how I like remember that chunk of my life, is I'll go and look at it and go, okay, so right around this year I was, you know, out with these guys and all this stuff. And, you know, because it's all like kind of a blur, man.
Well, do you have any recollection or of any like good stories you can think of from that actual tour that we were on together?
Yeah, I mean, the funniest thing to me was that Halloween show, and I think it...
Do you remember who I was for Halloween?
Yeah.
I was
that
Chopper.
That was the funniest... you guys were us. Like, that was the best part about it, was we had no idea. Like, you know, we'd been working on our costumes the whole tour, man.
Yeah.
You know, doing that Ghostbusters thing. And I guess you guys were just kind of, like, watching us and... figuring out, you know,
I went to a Dollar General and got like a beanie, and I think I bought like some kind of like weird t-shirt and chopped the sleeves off. Like, I didn't study you that much. I just was like, this kind of looks like Chopper. And I think I pulled it off pretty well. I don't know.
Well, the funniest part about it was I didn't even realize what you guys were doing until I saw Nick.
Yeah.
And he was dressed just like Josh.
Oh, dude.
And he was moving just like Josh. And I was like, okay, I get it.
And he pulled it off better than anybody as well.
I mean, oh, he totally did, man.
Because, you know, he's real skinny. And I think he had like a wig on. And
yeah.
I mean, and he, you know, Josh and Nick are both kind of frail and skinny. So it looked like the same person.
Yeah.
Shout out to Nick Newby and Josh Head, by the way, if you guys listen to this. Yeah. But I'm not saying you're frail.
Like, okay, I get it. Because I saw you with your sleeveless t-shirt on and your boots and everything, and I was like, man, Chris looking good, you know?
do you happen to remember after that Halloween show, that was the last show of the tour, that was in Seattle?
That was, yeah, it was the last tour. Yeah.
What was the name of that venue, do you remember?
Let's see.
Crocodile Rock or something like that?
No, it was...
Or the Showbox or something.
No, it wasn't the Showbox, it was, God, what was... I think when we played there, was it called the El Corazon?
I think it was the El Corazon, yeah, because I'd played there.
Before that, it was the Graceland.
See, I played there, I think I played there with Brazil or with some other band I was in when it was called the Graceland, because I remember it being the same venue. But yeah, I think it was El Corazon when we played with you.
Yeah.
Hello out there. Yes, hello out there, everyone. I'm Hal Schwartz.
And I'm Flynn McClain. Together, we host None But the Brave, a podcast dedicated to the music and career of Bruce Springsteen.
Bruce and E Street Band are on tour right now for the first time in 6 years, and we're taking a detailed look at what's happening on stage in our bi-weekly episodes.
We've also been recently joined by some very exciting guests, including rock journalist Warren Zanes and Stephen Hyden, Backstreet's Magazine founder Charles Cross, and Barstool's Kirk Menahan.
If you're a diehard Springsteen fan, this is the show for you.
So please subscribe to None But the Brave on your favorite podcasting platform, and we hope to see you further on up the road.
Thank you so much! We'll be seeing you!
But do you remember, I was going to say, so it was Halloween, you guys were the Ghostbusters, we were Emery.
Yeah.
Do you remember, you might not remember this because it probably didn't affect you, but a lot of the guys in your band were vegetarians, right?
Yeah, we kind of went in and out of vegetarianism.
Well, I remember at that point a lot of the guys were, because I think on that same tour we had both done things with PETA because Jason was there.
Yeah, yeah.
And we had stayed...
Jason Bayless.
Yeah, Jason.
Hopefully he'll listen to this, man.
Jason, what's up, man? I haven't seen you.
That dude was
I haven't seen you since 2004, man. But no, I remember we went to the PETA offices in Virginia on my birthday, and they gave me like a vegan birthday cake, and man, to each their own, but I wasn't stoked.
Yeah. I'll tell you though, man, those vegan shrimp were pretty good. I remember that lunch, and it was they had a big spread. You know, it wasn't just cake; it was like food and everything.
Well, you guys hooked us up with all that stuff because you know, like Jason was on the tour, but we didn't really do much with PETA. But we had like a PETA photo shoot and all kinds of stuff, which is funny because I'm the biggest carnivore in the world, and I'm standing there in a PETA shirt. But speaking of that Halloween show, though, like it's the end of the tour. And you know how at the end of the tour, you usually prank people. I mean, I've heard stories about your pranks with Emery and whatnot. So I don't know if you remember this or not, but I know the other guys in the band would probably remember. The night before, two nights before when we'd played in Spokane, we had ended up staying at this kid's house that we met at the show. And his parents had like this mansion. I mean, it was insane. And his dad was a hunter. So when we left the next day, his dad gave us like 8 pounds of elk jerky and elk like beef sticks. And so while you guys were playing, we got the keys to the van and we went out and we hid elk sticks all over the van. So you probably, and you were home at that point. Like you might not even have gotten the van. So I don't know who found it or what happened, but at some point somebody would have found a lot of like dried meat all over the van of the guys who were working with PETA.
I gotta be honest, man. I don't even remember that happening. Like,
that's what I'm saying because I remember that night perfectly. Like it was a great night. We played the show. We were dressed up as you guys. You guys were the Ghostbusters. We snuck in when you were playing and we hid all that meat in the van. And then I think like you guys were like, "Hey, let's go get some food after the show." And we're like, "Oh, dude, we got to drive to Florida or whatever from Seattle."
Yeah, y'all had a long ass drive after that.
So we just booked it. So like I never knew. It's kind of like, you know, you set a trap and you never know if anything gets trapped.
Never see if you never get to see your prank come to fruition.
Because I mean, I've talked to Toby and Devin and all those guys a few times in the last decade or whatever, and no one's ever said, "Hey, did you guys hide a bunch of meat in our van?" Like nobody ever said anything.
Well, I mean, you know, if you think about it, man, I mean, dried meat is not going to act the same way.
Yeah.
As like, if you had a bunch of like raw fish in somebody's van, like
true,
obviously raw fish, of course, you know, 2 days later, you're like, "What the hell?" But
I didn't even think about that.
I mean, jerky, it's like, I mean, that stuff can last. Like,
well, that's,
I mean, you ever like,
where's your van?
Old McDonald's cheeseburger somewhere that's like a year old and it looks exactly the same, you know?
Oh, totally. Yeah. Well, that's what I'm wondering. Like, where is that van, that white van you guys had? Maybe whoever has it now, it's still got meat sticks like placed all over the van.
Well, actually, that van, if I'm not mistaken, I actually talked to Matt about it recently. I was thinking about buying it.
Oh, really?
And, you know, because I asked him, I was like, you know, do you guys still have it? Like, what condition is it in? And he said that they put a new motor in it like 40,000 miles ago, but it needed a new transmission. You know, but he was going to sell it for me. I mean, sell it to me pretty cheap, but I ended up not getting it. But as far as I know, it's, well, when I talked to him, this was a few months ago, it was in Nashville.
Okay.
But past that, I don't know. But man, that thing, yeah, we had that van for a long time, man.
So one thing that I'd like to talk about to kind of keep this thing going, and I love talking to you. I wish this could be like an 8-hour podcast, but it's not. It's going to be like a half hour, 45 minutes, hopefully. But so the story about you moving to Indiana, do you want to elaborate on that a little bit? Or you want me to kind of give you some questions about that, or do you remember like the circumstances?
Yeah. I remember like, you know, you were kind of telling me about the wood, and please correct me if I'm, you know, getting off subject here, but I was wanting to work with you guys like in a kind of a management capacity or something.
Yeah. And we thought that was great. I mean, like, you know, I knew people in the industry, but at that point I was under the impression that like, you know, Emery was going to be huge, like the next, like, Under Oath or something, like, I don't know. So you're like, "Yeah, I want to manage you guys." I'm like, "Hell yeah, dude, heck, hook it up."
But meanwhile, I had no idea how to manage anybody. I had no idea what I was doing. But at the same time, I was like, I've seen a lot of people like managing bands. Like, how hard could it really be?
Yeah.
You know? But then, you know, one thing led to another and we kept talking about it and I ended up, you know, joining the band.
Yeah. I mean, I'd always been very interested in kind of a punk rock version of Iron Maiden.
Yeah.
And they have
exactly what it was like, man.
They have three guitarists and all of their guitarists are kind of different stylistically, you know? So it was, you know, you and my stepbrother, Aaron, and me, and we all could play our asses off, but we all had way different styles.
Yeah.
So that's why I loved it, because, you know, two guys could be harmonizing leads while another guy's playing like a rhythm riff. Like, there could be so many different things going on.
Absolutely. Yeah.
So do you remember,
yeah, it was great,
do you remember what happened? Like, you kept driving up to practice from South Carolina, driving up to Indiana to practice and driving up for gigs. And then do you remember when you finally moved here, what happened?
Yeah. So, I mean, that went on for months. Like, oh, I would months. Just take time off work.
You'd sleep on my couch and go eat tenderloins at the gas station.
Yeah. Yeah. For like weeks at a time.
Yeah.
And then I'd go home and go back to work. And yeah. So finally I was like, you know what? Like, I really like this band. Why don't I just move up here?
Yeah.
So I don't even remember. What was it, like a week or something before I was about to move? You called me and you were like,
no, dude, listen, it wasn't a week. It was literally like 48 hours before you were supposed to move here. You had the trailer packed. And I remember
yeah, it was pretty tight. It was pretty close.
Well, we had a showcase lined up with Victory Records.
Oh, okay.
I don't know if you remember that or not, but we had a showcase. They were interested in the band. They wanted us to come up there and like play at the offices for the staff. And like, if they liked us, it's like, hey, game on, you know?
Mm-hmm.
And right before you moved, our singer decided that he no longer wanted to be in the band. So, whatever, things, you know, it didn't happen.
Yeah.
But you still moved here, which was really cool.
We were kind of holding. And honestly, like, I really believed in the band. I was like, we got an interesting sound, and like, obviously the singer's gone, but you know, maybe we can, get somebody new in pretty quick and you know, turn this thing around.
Didn't happen.
Right. Yeah. It didn't end up happening.
It could have happened.
You know, and I mean, we had, plus I had everything like lined out, ready to go.
Yeah.
And I was like, well, I'm going to move no matter what, like, you know, which is what I did.
Yeah. And you stayed at my place for a long time. And then my sister's like, I need a roommate. And you're like, I'll move in with you.
Yeah.
And then I think, you know, you got to experience living in Indianapolis, which, you know, some people love it, some people hate it. But I know you made some good friends, and I know that my sister and you were probably lifelong friends after all that.
Yeah, yeah. It was really cool. Like your sister is amazing. And, you know,
definitely I wouldn't go that far. No, I love you, Sarah, if you're listening. I don't know.
It was a really funny, quirky, like, living situation,
yeah.
You know. I remember one night, I don't know if I ever told you about this, but I came home from work and I knew I had some beers in the fridge, and I was like, you know, long day, a couple beers. Yeah. And, I came in and I opened the fridge and I had this like six pack of, I don't know, some cheap beer, you know?
Yeah.
And it was completely empty. And there was like a $10 bill stuck in it with a note. And it was from Sarah. And she was like, sorry, we drank all your beer. And yeah. I was kind of mad. I was mad, but at the same time, I was like, I mean, you know, she gave me money for it, so I can't be that mad.
Yeah, I mean, that sounds like my sister.
Yeah.
Well, that's cool, man. I just remember, you know, you kind of being absorbed into my circle of friends, which was pretty awesome. Like, I don't know, like, I'm really glad that you spent time here and you got to know everybody. And I feel like when you left, I mean, you made some pretty good friends here in Indiana, right?
Absolutely, yeah. Well, yeah, like... Yeah, I mean, I still stay in touch with a bunch of people, you know.
That's cool.
Not maybe as much in touch as I would like to be, but you know how it is, man.
Well, yeah, you know. Like, I love you. You're one of my best friends, and I mean, we talk like once every 3 years, so.
Yeah.
I mean, I've got kids now. It's kind of crazy.
Like, when we do talk, it's like nothing has changed.
Yeah, I mean, there's no time that's gone by at all. Like, when we're talking about being on tour, you need to realize that was 2004 when we did that tour. I mean, that's
can't believe how long ago it was.
That's insane, man. It's 2018 now.
I know.
Okay, well, I don't want to bore people with all this like funny personal stuff. So I do want to ask, you did a big tour of Australia, right?
Yeah, yeah.
Do you have any like funny tidbits or anything that happened crazy over there?
Because
I know that I know like. Fans in Australia, they could be pretty insane.
Yeah.
Were you guys well received over there? Like, was it fun?
We really were, man. It was really fun. 'Cause it was a it was like a two-part tour. Like the first part, we were on tour with Story of the Year and Flogging Molly. And that was
that's an odd pairing, but I'd love to see
it was
that.
Crazy. Like, it was so weird because it was like arena shows.
Okay.
Like, I remember we played a 6,000 person room over there, and I had never played anything that big. Haven't since.
Do you remember what city that was in? Was that like in one of the smaller towns, or was that in like?
It was probably like Sydney.
Okay.
If I had to guess. But I just remember looking out, like, I remember sound checking, and they had all the lights on in the room, and I was just like, it was the biggest place I could ever be in, you know?
That's crazy, man.
And like, you just look out and all you see is just a gigantic building. And, you know, then when you went on stage, it was like, all you could see was like the first, maybe three rows. And then it was just like kind of a blackish haze after that.
Wow.
But it sounded like you were in a big room. Like, you know that, you know how when you're playing, not necessarily when you're playing a big show outside, but like when you're playing in a big room.
Well, yeah. And plus when you end up, you know, at some point in your career, you play places that are not set up for concerts.
Yeah.
And they have not done any kind of, you know, conditioning for the actual acoustics. And
yeah. So all they do is just bring in a shitload of speakers and, you know, it's just loud and the sounds bounce all over the place. And, you know, it doesn't necessarily sound ideal on stage, but you can get through it.
Yeah.
But it's just so weird, like the energy, like you can't see this huge crowd, but you get that energy back from them.
Well, I will say that with one of the bigger shows that I've played, I played with the Ataris Bamboozle back in 2008 or 2009. I can't remember. Big at Giant Stadium out there in East Rutherford, New Jersey, I believe. That day that we played, No Doubt played their reunion show, and like Demi Lovato and Fall Out Boy and like all these crazy bands. And I remember like we get up there to play and it was packed. I mean, it had to, I don't know, 80,000 people. I don't even know, but you get up there on stage and you look out and past the barricade and past like the first three or four rows of people, it's just a blur.
Yeah.
I mean, so it's
like, you can't even make eye contact at that point.
No, it's nerve wracking because it's so insanely huge, but it's not like I didn't get nervous. Like I would get nervous to play in front of like three or four people at a bar.
Yeah.
But when you've got like 100,000 people and you're looking out into the crowd and you can only see maybe seven people in front of you.
Exactly. Yeah. It's just, there's gotta be some kind of mathematical law about it, but it's like, I remember I played a classical guitar piece at my cousin's wedding and I was terrified. Like just the most fear I've ever experienced with a music situation. But yeah, playing in front of 6,000 people, no sweat, you know?
It's funny that you say that because I was supposed to play a classical guitar piece at my aunt's wedding a long time ago. And I was so freaked out to do it that I recorded it on a 4-track and then played it. like, hey, this is me. This is my wedding gift, but I'm not going to play it because I'm freaked out.
Okay. So I thought you meant that you like played it on a recorder, but acted like you were playing it on guitar.
No, I didn't do like a lip sync battle or anything.
That would have been awesome.
They wanted me to play this piece as like a wedding gift or whatever for the reception or whatever it was. And I was so freaked out because I knew there was only going to be like 30 or 40 people there. And it was just going to be me with a guitar. The night before, I got my 4-track, like cassette 4-track out.
Yeah.
And I recorded the entire thing. And then the next day I just handed him a tape. I was like, there you go. Just play the tape.
Yeah. Yeah. Like, here we go.
Like, it's totally me doing it. Just take the tape. The sentiment is the same.
Exactly. Yeah. The sentiment, the sound, everything.
Everything's the same. It's just not me doing it live.
Right.
This way, if I mess up, I can punch in and, you know, fix it.
Yeah. You can go in and fix whatever mistakes you want to. But man, back to Australia, it was amazing. Like, that first half of the tour was, I mean, Story of the Year was huge.
And oh, yeah.
Flogging Molly. I mean, it was insane. Like you said, like, it was the craziest bill for us to be on because, you know, I had never played with bands at that level before, you know, and it was so weird to like,
was that right after the first record on Tooth and Nail or Solid State, I guess is what you guys started on, right?
Well, no, we were on Tooth and Nail.
Okay.
I don't even remember when that was, man, to be honest.
It was like a year or two before.
No. It would have had to have been after The Question came out.
Okay.
Yeah.
Well,
so The Question was already out. So we were, you know, we were on two records.
Okay.
And the Question was doing pretty well. Like, it was selling pretty good. And we got on that tour, and first half was Store of the Year and Flogging Molly, and then the second half was I think what they called like Motion City Soundtrack.
Yeah, Motion City Soundtrack. They're really good.
Yeah. Yeah.
That's still so crazy. Like, you, Story of the Year has some like screamy, kind of heavier stuff. And I know Emery wasn't like a total screamo band. You guys had a lot of melody and like, you know, really cool parts, but that is such a weird mix of bands.
Yeah. But I mean, that would happen to us all the time, man. I remember we went out on tour with like 18 Visions.
Wow.
And like Remembering Never, like really heavy, like heavy metal bands.
Well, one thing,
and we just wouldn't fit. Like, I don't know.
One thing that I've noticed with international touring is I think a lot of the, you know, and maybe we'll get some international listeners, I don't know. But I know that a lot of it seems like the international music fans are maybe a little bit more open to maybe going to a show and seeing a lot of different kinds of bands, as opposed to in the States, it seems like everybody kind of has to fit together, you know?
Yeah. I mean, that could just be an American band thing. I mean, I remember watching a documentary on like Billy Joel when he took his band to Russia in the 80s, you know, and that whole like Cold War thing. And one of the things he was saying was like, they're just stoked that a band from America is here.
Oh, definitely.
You know?
Yeah.
And I mean, you know, not to make, you know, other countries sound like less than, but it could be that kind of thing. Like, oh God, we could go see this, like these three bands from America tonight.
Well,
you know,
I will.
Who cares what they all sound like, you know?
I will say that the last time I was in Europe, I was with my buddy Rob, and we were at a karaoke bar in Prague in the Czech Republic, and I was doing karaoke because that's what I do, you know?
Yeah.
And the guy that was running karaoke was this guy named Boris. Shout out to Boris if he ever finds this podcast. And I got done doing it, and I'm not good at karaoke. I just, you know, I'm a musician, so I understand timing and rhythm and pitch. And when I came off, I think I'd done like, I think I did like a Madonna song or something stupid. And he goes, you sound so good. You sound like MTV. It sounds like MTV. And I think what he was meaning was, and this might go hand in hand with what you're saying, you know, America, for sure, we, United States of America, we, you know, broadcast our culture out as far as pop culture and whatever, and people get these snippets of everything, so they might like it because of that. But also, he said I sounded like MTV, and I talked to him afterwards, and we kind of got to the bottom of it. I didn't sound good, but I speak English well. So he was like, you know, even though you weren't the best at singing this Madonna song, you understand inflection and pronunciation, and you know how to speak English. So he said I sounded like MTV. So I can see, like, you know, no disrespect to other countries. Believe me, I'm a traveling crazy person. And I love other cultures, and that's the best thing you can do with your time is go seek out and meet people from other cultures. But yeah, I think when bands from the States go to like different countries and tour abroad, that there can be that. I mean, there's a lot of people that probably love the band, but there's a lot of people that are like, hey, let's go see this crazy band from America that no one knows about, but I bet it'll be awesome.
Yeah. There probably is a lot of that too. And I mean, you know, and that, you know, that's a cultural thing too, I'm sure, with, cause I don't watch like German MTV. I don't have access to it, but I'm sure it exists.
Yeah.
You know, and like, but I mean, I'm sure that a lot of Germans probably watch American MTV.
Well, and it kind of goes hand in hand with, you know, one of my favorite bands of all time, and I don't know how well versed you are in them, is Silverchair.
Yeah.
And, you know, Silverchair, they put it when they were super, super young and they got signed, they put out Frog Stomp and it became like the best selling record that year in America. And then they did, you know, Neon Ballroom and Freak Show. And they had all these records in America that did really, really well. And then everybody in America just kind of forgot about them. But they continued to put records out in Australia, and they're like Led Zeppelin in Australia. I mean, they're like the biggest thing ever. And so that's where, like, I tell people still, like, oh, have you heard, you know, the Straight Lines album by Silverchair? And they're like, didn't even know that existed. I'm like, well, yeah, because they're not big here anymore, but they're not a band anymore. They're broke up now. But like, I think that's the thing of, like, you said you don't really watch German MTV, but I bet you there's some killer stuff on German MTV.
Oh, yeah, probably so, man.
So I think it just becomes, you know, the movies come from Hollywood and all our music, everything gets exported. And yeah, I think that's why. I'm not saying that's the greatest thing in the world. I will say that when I toured South Africa with with the Ataris, like there's so many great bands. This band called Photo Nadons, this band called Crash Car Burn, which is actually the opening band on our tour. So many bands that I would have never heard of and I still listen to this day. Like they're on my computer, they're on my iPod, they're on my iPhone. And those bands deserve to get more attention, but because, you know, they come from Johannesburg, they're probably not going to get it, you know?
Exactly. Yeah. And that, you know, that's the thing. Like I know, you hear people talk about like, I'm burnt out on music. Like, you know, people posting on Facebook, like, what are you listening to? I'm bored with everything.
Yeah.
And I'm like, dude, there's a shit ton of music out there that's so good. You just got to like figure out how to find it. You know
what I mean?
You know, people, it could be from the underground of America. It could be from another country.
People don't have any excuse though with the internet. I mean, when I was a kid and, you know, I would see Cliff Burton in my Metallica album wearing a Misfits shirt. So I go to the record store and buy the Misfits. I didn't know who the Misfits were. I knew he had a cool shirt on and I saw that on a CD. Like kids nowadays,
you just knew that a guy that you like this band, so they got to be pretty good.
And that's the same thing. Like Pennywise, when I was super young and Offspring was big and they were all over MTV, like in one of the videos, their guitar player Noodles had a Pennywise shirt on. So I went and bought a Pennywise album and they became one of my favorite bands. It's not the fact that, I mean, these kids nowadays, they have Spotify and YouTube and all that, like go seek stuff out. Like just go to Google and put, okay, if you like, you know, if you like Emery, okay, let's say there's a kid that likes Emery. If he goes to Google and he put bands that sound kind of like Emery in Google, there'll be 900 bands.
Yeah.
Like it's not hard nowadays. Like people don't understand, you know, if I wanted a NoFX record when I was 13, I had to mail order. Like I couldn't go to Amazon. I couldn't, you know, download it from iTunes. I had to like send an actual piece of paper in somewhere. And then they would 6 weeks later, send me a physical copy.
Yeah. You'd have to check your mailbox every, or you'd have to go to the record store and get them to order it for you.
That is true. I worked at a record store in the mid to late 90s. And they let me have Chris's punk section, which was pretty awesome.
Yeah.
Cause we had all the distributors and I could get like all this crazy stuff. And it was really cool. Cause then I could get records that I wanted as well. But I had this like little place where, oh, if you want the new, you know, the new Bad Religion, it's right here. If you want, and this is before some of those bands were just auto delivered everywhere, but you know, I had all the Fat Record stuff. I had all the Hopeless Record stuff, Lookout Records, like anything you could imagine. And then this place in Marion, Indiana, like, you don't think that you're going to go to Marion, Indiana and find like every punk record you want, but you could back in the late 90s because I worked there.
Well, and that's the cool thing about it is like, you know, like you're the kind of guy doing stuff like that. That's like the guy that works at the, you know, indie record label. Like he makes those relationships. He's like, okay, so this dude, Chris, is like bringing our records out there, you know? So he, you know, calls you or whatever and y'all make a connection. And then,
oh yeah, it was great.
You know, the scene grows that way. Like that's how you grow the scene.
At one time we had a venue there in Marion called the Raintree Theater. And it used to be an old movie theater. We had shows there and like Rise Against came and played. And, right before the first record on Fat even came out. And for a while we were talking to Dropkick about coming and playing there. Like, so I don't know if I had a lot to do with it from ordering records, but people were starting to take notice that we actually had a venue and that, you know, we had kind of like this kind of punk rock collective of people that were trying to throw shows in this little venue. So it was pretty cool. It was a good time in my life.
Yeah.
I felt like we were doing something that was positive. You know what I mean?
Exactly. Yeah. Cause I mean, you have a passion for these bands and this type of music and you want to do everything you can do to help them, like, not, you know, grow in your area because you want to see them.
Yeah, definitely.
You want to interact with them and stuff. It's, you know, I don't know. I mean, I hate to sound like the old guy that's like, oh,
well, but here's
not like
deal.
It is, you know,
we are the old guys. So we might as well sound like that. I mean, I've fought it long enough. I'm accepting.
I've been saying that for like 8 years. Like, I don't want to be the old guy, but
you're older than me, man. Come on.
Yeah. I'm 43 now. So I'm a middle-aged man.
I'm 39, man. I'm getting there.
Yeah.
Well, I tell you what, Joel.
This is your last year, so enjoy it, man.
I tell you, man, this is the first episode. I think it's been pretty stellar. Would you be interested in coming back for a part two?
Absolutely, man.
I'm not cutting you off. I just know this is the first one, and I don't want people to like, man, they're never going to stop talking about stuff.
Right.
So I tell you.
Yeah, I would love to, man. I could do like part 8, 9, and 10 if you want.
Okay, well,
absolutely. Definitely part two, man. I'm really interested in that.
Well, I want to leave with one last tiny story, and I'll bring it up, and then I want some feedback from you.
Okay.
I'm not sure exactly what the year was, but at one point you went on vacation with my family and I.
Yes.
To Florida.
I do remember. I remember most of it.
And the one thing that I remember is that one night we went out with everybody that was there. You know, we went out to the bar. Of course, my mother and my stepfather, they stayed back. But we went to the bar, and you were hanging out talking to the band that was playing, and you had a little bit too much to drink.
Yeah.
And we had some mahi-mahi, some seafood that afternoon. And we're in my mom's brand new Suzuki SUV.
Right.
And we're driving back from the bar, and Joel had a little problem. Do you want to take it from there?
Well, yeah. I mean, I guess, you know, most people can fill in the blanks with your you know, with the chemical reactions.
We had a little bit too much fun.
Too
that
much
night.
Booze.
Of course, and, I was driving. I was totally fine, but
yeah, you were totally sober. As I remember, you were pretty much the entire time I've known you.
Yeah, I'm not much of a drinker.
I think I've seen you have like maybe 3 beers in the whole time I've known you.
I think there was a night on that 2004 tour with you guys where I got a little lit because I was stoked that I was actually playing music and not just fixing guitars.
But yeah, so I made a mess in your parents' SUV. But the greatest thing ever was that it just amazed me that you guys, like, you cleaned it up.
I went out there at 4 in the morning after we got home, and I actually used like Windex and stuff, and I cleaned up the entire, and they never knew. They didn't know that ever happened until probably like 4 years ago. My sister told them.
Did she?
Yeah. Like, I think she like felt guilty or something.
But what was that like? Were you there when she told him?
No, I wasn't, but I was a little aggravated. Oh, I'm like, why did we go through so much work to cover it up? If you're just going to tell them 10 years later, you know?
Did they get mad?
No, they didn't. They didn't care. they thought it was funny.
If y'all are listening, I sincerely apologize for that.
Love you like a son, yeah, man. They ask about you all the time.
You barf in somebody's car and never tell them about it. It's kind of a shitty thing to do.
Well, but let me end this story and in this podcast as well with something that I think is funny about that night. And you might not remember this, but I thought it was hilarious. So we stop at the gas station on the way back. You'd already done your business and your shirt was off and you were kind of breathing hard and, you know, and I was like, we need to get some water for Joel. So we stopped at the gas station. And you get out of the car and you start to walk in. And my sister had some drinks too. And she was walking behind you. And I was there with you guys. And there was these two kids on skateboards out front of the gas station. And my sister says to the two kids, do you know who that is? And they said, no. And she goes, that's Joel from Emory. Google it. And then she... And I'll never forget that. I think we've made fun of her for that almost since that happened. It's always like,
that sounds like something she'd say, man.
She's like, that's Joel from Emory. Google it if you don't know. And I'll tell you that was one of my fondest vacations I've ever had.
That was a fun vacation, man. We had a really good time.
It was cool. That was awesome. Well, yeah. Joel, I've really enjoyed this podcast, and you've made my first episode a lot of fun. I didn't really know how it was going to go, but we haven't really had a lot of silence. I don't even think I'm going to edit this, man.
Sweet.
But I want to tell you, I love you like a brother. You're the best dude.
I love you too, man.
You're the best dude in the world. You've got great stories, and definitely we're going to do a part two.
Awesome.
Do you have anything you want to promote? Like, are you playing in a band right now? Or?
Actually, yeah, man. I'm playing with a couple of projects right now. I've got a band called Dysfunction, and we're kind of trying to start playing out around the Greenville scene. It's a cover band, but we're leaning heavy on the old school R&B stuff.
Okay.
And then I'm also playing guitar with an original band called JJ Woolbright and the Whiskey Road.
Cool.
Based out of Seneca. And that's kind of like, modern classic rock type stuff. Very heavy guitar bass, you know. Think like a modern version of Leonard Skinner.
Cool,
type
man.
Of deal. So. Staying pretty busy.
And that stuff's all on Facebook. They can find all those bands on Facebook. Okay.
Yeah, you can find us on Facebook, man.
Well, hey, man, I just you're the best dude in the world. Thank you so much for being a guest on That One Time on Tour.
Thanks, Chris, man. I appreciate it, man. I appreciate you thinking of it.
Yep. I'll talk to you very, very soon. And as soon as this is up on the net, man, you'll know about it. Okay.
Awesome, man. Sounds good.
Cool. Talk to you later, man. Bye.
All right. Bye-bye.
And there it was. Episode one of That One Time on Tour. Joel and I went pretty deep with some of that stuff. Please check out his bands. He was talking about Dysfunction, and he was in another band. I can't right now remember the name of it. So just go back and listen and you can check it out. I had so much fun talking to Joel. He's a great guy. I'm sure you could tell from the conversation that we had that we've had some really, really good times. And this thing is a lot of fun. I knew doing a podcast would be kind of scary, but you know, I like to talk and, it's a lot of fun. So I can't wait for the next one. The next podcast that we're going to have, my guest is going to be my old tour manager from when I was in the Ataris, Gavin Smith. He's lived all the way out in the Poconos, out in Pennsylvania. We had a lot of fun when we used to tour together, and I think it's going to be a lot of fun talking about everything. So I'm not really sure when that episode is going to come out. I still need to do the interview and edit everything together. So I'm going to get better at this as we keep going. Hopefully they'll be more frequent. But yeah, look out for episode 2 with my good buddy Gavin Smith. And thank you guys so much for checking this out. Please check us out on Instagram, Twitter, Facebook, SoundCloud. It's /TOTOT podcast, That One Time on Tour podcast. So thank you guys. I'm going to leave you with my favorite Emery song. I heard it every night on tour on that first tour back in 2004. It's a song called Walls. So here it is. Joel Chabergreen on the bass guitar with Emery playing Walls.
Hey there, I am Johnny Christ from Avenged Sevenfold, and I've got a podcast called Drinks with Johnny you're going to want to check out. I sit down with a bunch of different people from all different walks of life, from professional wrestlers to actors, comedians, fighters, musicians, everything in between. I'm just looking to make some friends and have a good time doing it. So if that sounds like something you're into, go check out Drinks with Johnny, streaming everywhere now.